WMAN, and it is election season. We're just a little over 30 days away from the general election, which is coming up November 5th. And one of the things that KMAN is proud to be a part of is the opportunity to team up with the League of Women Voters for their annual League Candidate Forum. And today, being it is an odd-numbered year, we have City Commission and School Board elections. And today, we are going to be featuring candidates for both of those positions. We have 7 of the 8 candidates here for the Manhattan City Commission. To give you a kind of a bit of a preview, there will be an introduction of the candidates and opening statements. There will be a number of questions. This first session will last till about 3:35 or so, and then we'll take a little bit of a break, head back to the studio for some news and some announcements, and then at 3:45 we'll have school board candidates that will be joining us here on the program. So we are proud to be a part of this, along with the League of Women Voters. We've been doing this for a number of years now. The Manhattan Area Chamber of Commerce is also proud to sponsor this event as well. Marissa Larson is our moderator for the event today, and we're now going to go live to the podium here at the Manhattan Public Library, where the 2019 edition of the League of Women Voters Candidates Forum is underway.
Hello and welcome to the League of Women Voters Candidates Forum. We are happy to co-host this event with AAUW and KMAN. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization, and hosting candidates forums to get their positions out on issues is one of the main things that we do. So why don't we go ahead and get started? So I will introduce the candidates very quickly. We have 8 people running for 3 open seats on the City Commission: Aaron Estabrook, Mark Hattasall, Caleb James, Linda Morse, Maureen Sheehan, Mary Renee Shirk, Sarah Siders, and Vincent Tracy. So we will open it with opening statements from the candidates, and let's just start here at the beginning with Aaron and head on down.
All right, does that sound good? I'm Aaron Estabrook, and I'm running for City Commission. I'm a father, a husband, a combat veteran, a K-State graduate, former school board member. I've built statewide coalitions, defended educators, advocated for fiscal responsibility, promoted infrastructure investment, and believe in the American dream. I grew up poor on a small farm in Dodge City, and as an adult, I've always sought roles where I can serve others and help them navigate a problem or get back on their feet. I'm a listener and problem solver, and I'm a loyal believer in the underdog. My work at Job Corps the last year has inspired me and strengthened my resolve in that the station you were born into does not dictate the height of your potential. I've given up alcohol completely and not had a drink since last April. That truly has been a blessing. In July, a couple months ago, I married my best friend, Doncha McDonald. Her passion and advocacy for mental health informs and inspires me every day. I have young daughters in our elementary and preschools. They are the future and keep me grounded and humble, but endlessly proud. I'm asking for your vote because I'm going to hear your concerns and fight every day to make Manhattan stronger. I believe we have opportunities in the next decade to strengthen our infrastructure, address deferred maintenance, and provide quality of place that will last a generation. Budgets are reflective of priorities, and I believe we need to make sure we have our priorities centered on people, outcomes, and goals. Community safety, lower property taxes, and workforce housing are key areas I want to see progress as a commissioner.
Thank you, Aaron. Mark Hattasall.
Hello, I'm Mark Hattasall. I've been a chiropractor here in Manhattan for 35 years. I'm married with 2 grown daughters, the youngest one here at K-State. I started my public service over 25 years ago as a board member of UFM, and after a few years, I was the treasurer for the board. A few years later, I was appointed to the Social Service Advisory Board. I learned about the social services sitting at the feet of C. Clyde Jones and Edith Stunkel. I've spent the last 3 years getting our church's stalled building project going again. As the church council president, building committee chairman, capital campaign chairman, I have taken on the responsibility of making sure that we would get a new church built, and I am going to be leaving at 3:15 today for the ribbon cutting or groundbreaking, so if I sneak out, that's why. The point about that has been that I helped to sell the vision for the church, worked with others to solve problems, and helped keep us focused through those problems to get the shared end result. I've spent my 35 years in Manhattan getting to know the people, organizations, and businesses here. While doing my door-to-door campaigning, it has been rare when I've gone more than 6 or 7 houses without knowing the person who lives there or knowing something about them. I have had over 120 people donate to my campaign so far because they know me and they feel they can trust me to do what is right for Manhattan. You can too. I'd appreciate your vote.
Thank you, Mark. Caleb James.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for showing up on this Sunday. It's a lovely day outside. A bit cold this morning. I'm Caleb James. I'm running for city commission, as is everyone up here, but I feel like I have to say that. I grew up a military kid. My dad did 26 years in the Army, so I graduated at Junction City High School a year early and took the same career route and joined the Army. Did a little over eight years in the Army, deployed, did all the good stuff, each coast of the United States, Fort Lewis, Fort Benning, had a great time. Met my beautiful wife, who was also in the Army. We both got out of the Army and settled down here in Manhattan. The choice was definitely the region, and what made us decide Manhattan was, number one, the quality of life that we saw here. We thought this is a perfect place to raise our children. And then secondarily, MATC was here. I went and got my HVAC certification at MATC, and that's what paved the way for me to start my family and not be in debt with student loans. Afterwards, I continued my education, became a senior business analyst, which is what I do now. Look over contracts, look over efficiencies, and find out where you can make processes more efficient and save some money. The reason why I'm running for city commission, number one, is property taxes have increased over the last 6 years every year. Every budget cycle, it's been harder and harder for families to afford to live here. I have a high school daughter and 2 toddlers, a boy and a girl. And looking at finding a house that we can afford and then pay specials on and then pay property taxes on, I don't think the people with middle income have been treated fairly in this city. And I want to see some equality. I want to see the city commission look at the budget, be responsible, not say we can just raise taxes and make things harder on especially the lower and middle class families. So that's the main reason why I'm running, and I'm asking for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb James. Linda Morse.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Morse, and I am a current city commissioner seeking re-election, the only sitting commissioner. I believe I have more to do. I think that our community is very special. We have a vibrant community. When you consider the other cities and counties in this state, we have a lot going for us, but that is built on the backs of the previous commissioners and the courage they had to take matters in their own hands and and develop economic drivers here. We are a government town, more or less, with mostly Fort Riley and K-State and soon NBAF and related contracts. Agriculture is the area that we really can't control, and it's right now there's a downturn, and even they are struggling. Our community's struggling with the sales tax we receive. It's flatlined, but we were able to keep our property taxes to a minimum here, and that's a good thing. We don't raise it very much, ever. The other units of government have contributed to a rise that you'll see on your taxes later this year when you get your statement. But it is some of the things. I look at the sales tax increases that we have and even the bond issue for the school district as being dependent upon the ballot initiatives and the citizens in this community that vote to do those things. And that's the only way we have really grown here. It's important that we continue on. I'll stop for now. More later.
Thank you, Linda. Now we have Maureen Sheehan. And would you, yes, speak clearly into the microphone, please. Thank you.
I will try. I'm not used to speaking into a microphone. Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here. front of myself so I don't have to lean over. I'm Maureen Shahan. I'm running for city commission. I grew up in a really small town in north central Kansas. I came to the big city of Manhattan when I was 18, 40 years ago, to go to K-State, and I've basically been here ever since. I graduated from K-State with a degree in biochemistry, started a career at K-State, got married, had kids, raised my children here. They're now grown. I have three children. They have families of their own. I have six grandchildren. Now that I have more time to myself, I have been active in a number of things around town, such as the Coalition for Equal Justice. I'm a board member on the Wonder Workshop, and I volunteer there as frequently as I can, or am needed. My goal as a city commissioner would be to help the city to move forward in a way that's not going to strain people's budgets. We need to grow in the higher income ranges, but what about the janitors and the secretaries and the people that make your food? Those people need to be able to live here also in a way that and lead a life that is dignified. So we need to look for ways that we can keep Manhattan affordable while still moving forward. That would be my goal as a commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. Now we have Mary Renee Shirk.
Good afternoon. I'm Mary Renee Shirk. I've lived in town for about 25 years. This microphone is not very unfamiliar to me, as I have been a media professional working for newspapers and radio. I've also appeared on stage and emceed a number of events around town, including Rocky Horror Picture Show. I've also emceed the St. Patrick's Day Parade and a number of events. And what that experience has given me is I've been able to interact with literally thousands of people in Manhattan from all different socioeconomic places, from all different positions in town. And what I found out is a lot of them don't feel represented. They feel like they don't belong to Rotary or Optimist, or they don't have time to serve on a lot of boards. And they look at City Commission and they don't see anyone there who knows what we like to call as the struggle. I came here as a young single mom. I went to college. I got a degree. I got married. We did what you were supposed to do and moved to Olathe and bought a big house on a cul-de-sac. And I was there 18 months and hated every second of it. And so 18 months later, we packed up and made the drive over the bridge. And as soon as we hit that bridge into town, we could feel it, how much we love this town. My jobs have been to be a cheerleader for this town. And it has enabled me to meet a lot of people and to really hear the struggles that they have. The reason that my husband and I now are very successful, own a home, are because we had fabulous landlords and really supportive and understanding employers, as well as a lot of other services here in Manhattan that enable us to rise up. My husband works for PayPal. He works here 3 weeks a month and in Manhattan, New York, 1 week a month. We are the people you talk about when you say they could live anywhere in the country and we choose to stay here. I'm running so that we can have the things here that keep people like me here and that keep townies here. I think we focus too much on drawing folks into town and not enough about supporting the people that are here that, as George Bailey says, do most of the living and breathing and dying in this town. So I'm here to represent townies. I'm Mary Renee Smith. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here. Appreciate your presence and your concern about things in the community. I have lived here in Manhattan for about 16 years. I went to Kansas State and moved here in 2002. After I graduated, I spent one very wrong year, similar to Mary Renee in Lawrence, and I hightailed it back here as soon as I could. And I've been here ever since. My husband and I pastor church together downtown, and we have two kiddos that we live in with in the Northview neighborhood. We bought our house about 10 years ago, and we have made Manhattan our home. And I think there's a lot of people up here who would say the same thing, that we discovered that Manhattan was maybe a great place to attend school, but there was something else that drew us here where we said, wow, this is a place that I can call home. And I feel that as a young professional as an aging millennial, if that's a thing, I have something to offer because we are wanting to attract some of these young professionals. We use this phrase all the time, attract and retain young professionals in many of our communications as we think about the future of our city. And I think that's really important, but we need to know who those people are. I've made myself a student of millennials and Generation Z in terms of understanding their habits and the things that they're attracted to and what kinds of cities in the world are magnetic to those people. And I think that when we're looking at the future of our city and sustainability, how do we get out from being on the roller coaster of what the public sector, Fort Riley, Kansas State are doing? We want to have something that's a little bit more stable, and I think expanding our private sector and promoting prosperity by attracting our young workforce and making this a competitive community for them, and therefore bringing business dollars in from the outside, will be very effective in long-term sustainability and prosperity. So I'd appreciate your vote in November as you consider these things.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for showing up. My name is Vincent Tracy, and I'm a candidate for the Manhattan City Commission. I first came here in 1975, courtesy of the United States Army, was reassigned around the world, met my wife in Korea, brought her back here to Manhattan area. After living on the installation for a while, we said, hey, Manhattan's a much better place to live. Let's go get ourselves a home. So in 84, we bought one, and the Army, in its infinite wisdom, immediately assigned us to Germany. So we became absentee landlords, rented out our home while we were gone, and experienced all those great things that happened to landlords. When it came time to retire, we decided we like Manhattan so much, we'll come back and we'll retire there. We did that just in time for the 1993 flood. We live in the Northview area on Knoxbury Drive. Had a little bit of experience with water. Nonetheless, after retiring from the Army with various police positions, I became a bus driver mechanic for USD 383, a security guard at the Job Corps, worked for a year as a corrections officer with Pottawatomie County, was a customer service representative for the Flint Hills Internet out of West Loop before it folded, and worked various other positions. I'm currently with the U.S. Department of Agriculture on College Avenue. I'm an IT specialist, and I'm helping to ramp up the NBAF personnel. I'm running to try and make Manhattan those things that we were told when we were getting ready to buy Harp Place. This was supposed to be a place for people to be able to retire to. Property taxes and sales taxes are not making that very viable. I want to work to make sure that our property taxes don't go up any more than absolutely necessary. We can't stop it. And if sales taxes must go through, that we have them for policies and projects that the citizens support. Thank you.
Thank you, Vincent Tracy. So on to our first question. We will start with three questions from the League of Women Voters, and you all should have gotten note cards as you came in. If you have questions, please write them on the cards, hold them up. Someone will come and get them from you. And after we go through the League questions, we will go through a few of the questions from the audience. So I'm going to just continue going down the table as we have you guys in alphabetical order. So Aaron, you get to go first. What are the three biggest issues you see for Manhattan, and how would you fund these?
Three biggest issues. So I think that we have, one would be workforce housing, funding that through private and contributable private donations, but also if a lot of the future projects may depend on the sales tax question. If we have revenue in there to do projects, then that would be where I'd like to dedicate some funds and have participatory budgeting through that process to get the community's input. The second, maybe really, there is no order on these three. The important is flood mitigation, the levee, making sure the levee is taken care of. There's one point, it's about a $10 to $15 million, it changes depending on who you ask, investment that the city needs to do for the levy. And that would be our part. The Federal Army Corps has come up with funds to do their part. That's going to come out of something. It can either be from the sales tax or it can be if we make cuts, but we really need to do that. There's $10 to $15 million protecting 1.2 billion in assets and homes and people's lives, livelihoods, our water system. So those two, and the third is just kind of a simple incrementally trying to alleviate the pressure of the property tax, find ways to bring that down slow or maintain a flat property tax so we can keep what we have and maintain our strong internal structure.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. And I should have mentioned, and this is for our audience out there and our radio audience, each candidate gets a minute and a half to answer the question. So, Mark Hattasall.
Some of the biggest issues right now are the Wildcat Creek flooding, and part of I think the solution to this, and we talked about it the other night, is going to be detention ponds upriver to the west of town here, and the county commission has taken a look at that, and that's really going to be a solution that they have to be the drivers of. Because Manhattan's in the county, the Manhattan taxpayers will have to pay for whatever solution we come up with. But the solution is not going to be found in the city limits of Manhattan because there's no place for any mitigation. I'm not sure how we're going to pay for it, but we either need to start trying to solve it or stop acting like we're going to solve it, because there hasn't been really any forward pressure to stop the flooding, just to get the houses bought up and stuff. Secondly, I think one of the things is that it's too hard to open up and start and build new businesses and stuff in Manhattan. We noticed with the Brahms store out on the west side of town, they wanted to put up 11 signs. All of our ordinances say you can only have like four. And so now that thing is stopped. It's like we need to give business room to succeed. If they think they need 11 signs, let them have 11 signs, get them open, get them in business, and then hopefully they can take one or two down after a while. But we're trying to get this new church built. We stumbled into all kinds of red tape that drove up the cost of the building and the length of time it took to get it built. The third thing is that we need to attract more. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Caleb James, same question.
Okay. Issue number one is property taxes are too high. You don't fund that. Stop raising taxes. Second issue I have is fixing the levee and Wildcat Creek flooding. Need to build the detention ponds up north. We need to work with the Army Corps and the county to figure out how that's going to get paid for. The bottom line is it needs to happen. My wife and I lost both of our vehicles and everything that we owned last September when it flooded. So it's a problem that needs a resolution sooner than later, and we need to work at that. The third thing is equity. We need to make sure that this is a place where everyone feels included. The only community center that didn't receive funding was the Douglas Center. That was the center that was founded because black soldiers couldn't go anywhere that white soldiers were, and so they had to find a separate pool, a separate community center. And I think it sends the wrong message when our commission funds two other community centers but leaves that one up to a coin toss or if you decide to pass the sales tax. Whether that was their intent or not, we need to understand that this sends a message to the people of our community. I've had multiple people come up to me and say, why is it the brown community that never gets anything? The wrong perception. We had the opportunity to fund it through economic development funds. We turned that down. We passed the buck. We're sending the wrong message. Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb. Linda Morse.
The three biggest issues I see are, I agree about affordable housing. I think we have to do some creative things. There's a group here in the community working on some solutions. And one of the things that they've been talking about that strikes a chord with me is called a housing trust fund to help start up houses. And it would start small, but it's something that Lawrence has had a great deal of success. And it they have to start with some capital. I'd be willing to contribute $100,000 or $200,000 from economic development just to get it started. But the whole idea is that it is also privately supported. But it has to have a start. And so that's one idea that has come forward. But we've been wrestling with affordable housing for a long time. And so we have to push hard enough to get something done. The other, I agree about flood mitigation. And I'm concerned about the Blue River and Wildcat Creek. And I want us to start building higher than we have been. You know, every time we move the mark a little bit higher, a flood comes along and knocks that level down. So we have to go, we have to do it in a better way than we've been doing it. Too many people are being hurt by it, and it's our responsibility to do it. And the third thing is, the levee is about flooding also, and that's major, and I'm going to stop.
Thank you, Linda. Maureen Shahan, and I'm sorry, I'm going to repeat the question just again for our audience and for our radio audience. So the question is, what are the three biggest issues you see for Manhattan, and how would you fund these?
Three biggest issues, I think, well, primarily it starts with infrastructure. The rains this summer have shown us repeatedly that we need to do something. There's three sinkholes. There's been, I can't count how many times sewers have collapsed, water mains have broken. Our infrastructure is aging. Maintenance has been deferred, and we need to address that sooner rather than later. We can't just keep pushing, passing the buck on that. One of the, when I was at a water conference a couple months ago, one of the comments that I heard was, we knew that the levee didn't perform as it was intended in 93. That's 26 years. We've had 26 years to address the levee, and now suddenly we've had another flood, and oh, we should address the levee. So we need not to keep passing the buck on issues like that. So really, infrastructure, and housing and infrastructure are my four. How do we fund them? I'm not entirely sure. We need to look for money from federal money, federal dollars anywhere we can get it, state dollars anywhere we can get it. If we have to increase taxes locally, we need to do that with a lot of thought, and with any dollar that we get, we need to really consider hard whether the project that it's going for is going to help the city or not.
Thank you, Maureen. Mary Renee Shirk.
My number one issue is civil engagement and representation. And one of the things that Linda mentioned is one of the reasons that that is important. Recently, a number of groups around Manhattan have gotten together and been able to propose some really interesting ideas that come from the people. We shouldn't just expect the city commission or the city planners to always have the best ideas or to always know what's best for every neighborhood. Civil engagement is very important. For me, some of it, it's about signage. Over on Juliet, when they're redoing the brick, perhaps a sign that says who paid for that, what the project is, and when it will be done. And instead of driving down the street and cussing about more construction, you get to be proud that we're doing something, and you get to see where your money is going. Again, that civil engagement means that when we're talking about taxes and planning for the future, people can see where their money went and are maybe more likely to invest in other things in the city if they can see where it's going. We voted on the school tax last year. They won't start construction until next year. I guarantee I'll have to remind myself, I voted for this, as we have construction going on. Again, for me, civil engagement, representation, which leads into taxes. I think before we spend any more money, we need to stop and take a breath and think about what we want Manhattan to look like in the future. And for me, that's also an issue of transportation. As we all get older, we're not going to be able to drive. We're going to need to depend more on public transportation, on biking, on walking. That's also how you make Manhattan more affordable, are those types of services. And again, that goes back to asking the people what they think will work best for them and how best to spend their money.
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
Thank you. I believe that three of the key issues that are facing Manhattan really all go back to our need for sustainability, our need to be able to be more established and grounded through the various waves of change that happened, and especially with what I feel like is accelerated change in nearly every area of human existence. I think three things that would really be helpful would be to address housing for our workforce, to provide different variations of housing through development, through making use of our existing infrastructure. We're always talking about everything from road maintenance to, you know, all the potholes we're driving into and flood mitigation. I think that relates also with climate change, which is something that's facing the entire world right now. But I think it's something we really need to take into consideration is that our weather is acting erratically. It's causing a lot of pressure to the current infrastructure. And I'd like to see us use the existing infrastructure better. I think that Generation Z is very interested in moving to cities that care about that. And so when we're looking at housing development, we're looking at creating live, work, and play spaces that are also ecologically friendly. I think that's important. And along with that, I think a final thing would be just developing, investing in community pride, anything that we do to clean up our streets, invest in Aggieville and things like that are really going to make a difference in showing people that we're all proud to live here.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
First and foremost, I want us to work on safety issues that impact the whole city, not just certain segments. The levees, both on Blue River, possibly some on Wildcat Creek, working with the other government agencies to try and get those retention ponds built so that we can reduce the amount of flooding that happens. I'd also like to see us make it more affordable for people to come here. Maybe we can do some kind of property tax abatement using some of the funds that are already available to us. I'd also like to see us make it more enjoyable for people to do the things they need to do, not necessarily things people or certain special interest groups want to do. We have a big problem with health and food deserts. If you've read the local newspaper, Hy-Vee is no longer going to be open 24 hours. Limiting when people getting off late at night can be able to go do their grocery shopping. We need to do better, and we need to make the city more efficient. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tracy. So for the second question from the League, we have two issues have been cited by studies as lacking sufficient support in Manhattan. They are mental health and child care. Do you agree that these areas are of primary importance? And if so, how would you address these needs? If not, what other two issues are more important and how would you address those needs? So, Aaron.
Oh, we're starting with me again.
We're going to start with you again. Sorry.
All right. Awesome. Mental health is extremely important to me and my family. My wife and I serve on the NAMI board, and NAMI is the National Alliance of Mental Illness. I have been through my own struggles as a soldier transitioning out, and as in the military, I oversaw as an NCO some situations that have really never left me. In the sense of suicides on post, that was at Fort Lewis, not at Fort Riley. But you always want to know how you can do more, and I think community members are stepping up. There's always ways to signify that you matter. There's bracelets, there's signs around town. We have more and more students and young people in our community and soldiers at risk, and you combine alcohol or something else or a financial situation with housing affordability and you become a very high risk for suicides and severe mental illness taking root. So that is always going to be at the forefront for me. I'm the vice president for NAMI Kansas. And then the other issue, child care, it's ridiculously expensive to work and put your children through childcare in a place that provides anything that looks like learning in our community. And I don't know that the city commission can address that, but as a young family, I would be reflective. I think we need young families on our commission if we're going to attract more young families to have that conversation to talk about those obstacles. So I will be an advocate for both those issues.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. Mark Hattasall.
I'll start with child care because I know a little bit about that because our church is trying to put an early learning center child care facility in our new building out there, and we thought we had it through the code services people okay, and then suddenly the health department child care licensing people got a hold of it, and another $30,000 later, and what seems like unreasonable requests, there's enough regulations in place 10 years ago to keep kids safe in facilities. They need to stop imagining things that could happen and making people plan for them. I had a patient last week who's a child care provider in their house, and she said three of her friends who did child care in her house have quit in the last year because the regulations are getting too hard to comply with or too expensive. And that is why institutional child care is so expensive, because building a new building, creche, ours, the one that Christian Church is building out there, they make it too expensive to start with, and then you have to charge a lot more. Mental health care, obviously that's a big problem. When they started turning people loose on the streets instead of keeping them in facilities, was a terrible idea. I don't really know much about it. I'm glad they Pawnee Mental Health got their new facility over there to start trying to address some parts of that. Having the police department do, having their officers trained, that's a good step too. There have to be just more of a focus on that somehow, and there needs to be cooperation between the state and the city.
Thank you, Mark. Caleb James.
So for mental health, there's definitely a shortage of mental health professionals. That's something, I think both of these are something that the commission can help to address. When we're talking about using economic development funds and using chamber resources to bring businesses and attract businesses in, I think one thing that we can do, the chamber just came before the city commission asking for additional funding. But the commission said, can you prove return on investment? I think one of the ways the chamber can do that is for the commission to give them the tasking of bringing in a child care facility and to have a price range that they will be willing to provide these services that is affordable, and then also a wage floor where we know that the people working there will have living wages. That's a way for the chamber to say, here's return on investment. When you give us money, we can positively return on that. And it is also a way for us to say, you know what, we're going to address some of the issues that our people are having that they can't necessarily solve by themselves. In that same manner, we want to figure out a way to get more mental health professionals to stay here. I know a lot of, being a veteran, I know a lot of people who worked on Fort Riley and they left because it was too expensive to live in Manhattan and they didn't want to live in Junction City, and they could get a government job pretty much anywhere. So they went ahead and hightailed it out of here, went down to Texas where there's no state taxes. We can't do anything about that, but we can make Manhattan more affordable for the professionals we're trying to attract.
Thank you, Caleb. Linda Morse.
Yes, both of those issues are very important to this community, and we haven't been able to solve them. Mental health has been a state issue for a long time, and we've watched as the state has continued to reduce money to the mental hospitals, even closing them, decertifying them from the Center for Medicare Services. Those are tragedy things, and our community has suffered. More recently, Pawnee Mental Health and our community actually worked hard. Yusha Reddy was the lead person for us, and when I was mayor, I said, Yusha, there's no way I can come up to speed on what you've been working on. You call me when you want me, and I'll be there to support this. Mental health is critical. We did fund two co-responders, and they are on call. They are housed at Pawnee, employed by Pawnee, and are on call by the Riley County Police Department anytime they want them, whether it's in the jail or at a site. There's more, but child care has been a problem we have not been able to solve since I've come here. I've lived here 40 years, and it's expensive. And we see families making decisions that one spouse won't work because child care will take all of their salary. We don't have all high-paying jobs here. And so there are families that are disadvantaged by child care, and we want quality. I love the K-State Center, for example. It's the premier one here locally. Thank you.
I'm going to repeat the question. So again, the question is, two issues have been cited by studies as lacking sufficient support in Manhattan. They are mental health and child care. Do you agree these areas are of primary importance? If so, how would you address these needs? And if not, what other two issues are more important and how would you address those needs? Maureen Shahan.
Yes, these are both very important. We do have a fair number of mental health professionals, but it's really expensive to go to a private mental health professional. So finding ways to help people pay for that, I don't know how to do that, but I would be really willing to listen to any kind of ideas. I believe that Pawnee Mental Health has been a valuable asset to the community, and I would look for ways to expand their services. Really anything that can bring the prices down to allow people to seek the health treatment that they need. Mental health is just another facet of health overall. And if you can't afford it, it's going to wear on your health. So, yes, we need to do something. Child care. I was a single parent of three toddlers. I know the struggle. It's nearly impossible to pay for child care for three little ones and housing and food and et cetera. So anything that we could do to bring in a larger child care facility, mirrored off the one at K-State, I would be willing to work on that.
Thank you, Maureen. Mary Renee Shirk.
I think if we could find a way to solve mental health issues, we could run for president or emperor of the world or something. But I think it's no secret that mental health is also affected by your access to food, your access to safe housing, about feeling singled out or isolated, about feeling helpless and like you're not heard. So it comes back to me, to letting people know that the city cares, to giving them vehicles to do that. The co-responder program through at Raleigh County Police Department, I actually listen to the scanner for fun because I'm that kind of geek. And I have heard them respond and really be able to de-escalate situations and help families on what is the worst day of their lives. And if that's what we can do in the beginning, then that helps a lot. As far as other mental health, for me, it comes to an overall looking at how do we make Manhattan as less stressful as possible and make people feel connected to other people in their neighborhood and their surroundings. Child care. I have four children. I was a foster parent for a while, had 10 kids one time over Christmas break. And Mark, I'm glad that the kids at your childcare are going to be safe and that your childcare is following the regulations. I know sometimes those regulations seem difficult. As a foster family, they inspect your house, and let me tell you, the things they look at are very particular, and it's important to keep children safe. The reason that K-State provides such amazing childcare, all the folks there have degrees or have training or are moving on with training to provide childcare. The way we make childcare more affordable is by giving parents the ability not to have to work full-time jobs or be able to work more flexible so they have the choice to stay home and a choice on who provides childcare for their children.
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
Yes, I also agree here with everyone. This is obviously from the, I think, reflecting the 2015 Manhattan Community Needs Assessment, and child care and mental health really did come up high on the needs, the felt needs of our community. And I think those are just needs across the nation. And so whenever we're seeing, you know, a problem that's a pattern, not just for us locally, but it's also something that's occurring in other communities. So I like to borrow from other cities. I like to think about, okay, who else is doing this well? Let's not reinvent the wheel. I've done a little bit of research on this, specifically thinking about child care. And I do think that there is a certain level of red tape. I was a foster home social worker and was part of, you know, keeping foster homes licensed. And so I know about the how difficult that licensing process can be for daycares as well. But I think that we can be even more creative, thinking about on-site daycares at work in workplaces or also in senior homes. Those are just things that some people are doing in other communities that I love. As far as mental health, I applaud the collaboration between Pawnee and RCPD and the Voluntary Stabilization Center that we've recently implemented here. I think that's really important. And as a mental health therapist myself, I see that we're constantly on a wait list. I think there's more that we can do to be here for our people and to provide people with support beyond just therapy in addressing poverty, housing, and transportation as well.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
I agree that the mental care and child care are important issues to our community. Personally, the mental care is important to me. I lost my wife to cancer 2 years ago, and I require weekly counseling trying to adjust to the new normal. It's not easy. And we don't have a lot of available mental health people who will come out and assist with this. We need to work on that. As far as child care goes, I had a neighborhood child care provider two houses down from me. They changed the regulations to the point that her house couldn't possibly meet those regulations. So she opened a new business on East Highway 24. The city annexed that property, and she was right back to those regulations keeping her from being able to provide those services. We need to relook at what those regulations are. Do they really meet a need for safety of the children? Some of them having safety locks on the upper cabinets of the kitchen. Nonetheless, we need to do better with what we have and work to make it safer for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Vincent Tracy. And the third question from the league is, do you see the local government as representative of the community at large? If so, how do you plan to support and enhance the citizen engagement? And if not, what would you suggest to make local government more inclusive? So, Aaron, you're on the hot seat again.
All right. The local government, I don't see it as reflective in the sense, and that's one reason why I am running. This community aims to attract not just retirees, but also young families, and yet we don't have people on our commission that have children in our school system, and I think that those struggles we just talked about, one of the best things that we have going for us in this community is our school system. I'm biased that I served on the school board, but the problems that involve child care and affordability are things that are being tackled by USD 383 and the early learning communities, and that partnership is essential. And I see that bringing that knowledge onto the commission is something that is in need. Citizen engagement, I think that we could have more transparency in the sense of promoting different times and availability for meetings, different platforms. It's always a struggle to balance that because I know when we do offer the commission meetings on Facebook Live, there might be seven people or two people, and I might be one. Sometimes Jared McKee's on there, and he's at the meeting. So I think we have to get people to want to be involved, and that means reaching out and giving opportunities. It's great to have eight people running. We'll have eight ambassadors for our city on issues, I think.
Okay, thank you. Mark?
I think the big problem is apathy. As I've gone door to door, people's like, oh, there's an election coming up. It's like, it's November, people. There's going to be an election every year. So it's amazing that how many people just don't pay attention enough. And everybody's busy, a lot of the people realize they probably aren't going to make much of a difference with their vote. But every vote counts. Is it representative? I don't know. We've got three commissioners from the west side of town, one from your side of town, two. And so that's spread out. I don't know if maybe trying to do precincts or zones or have instead of everybody being at large, if it might be a good idea to try to divide the city up into five locations and have people run from each one so that there's better geographical representation, which might make for better socioeconomic representation also. But we've got to somehow address apathy. You can hold a gun to somebody's head and get them to register to vote, but you still can't make them show up on election day. The thing is, when people get a passion for something, they'll show up. I just don't think people put a high enough priority. They want to complain about things, but when push comes to shove, it's like, well, I don't want to come down there on Tuesday night and show my face and maybe be. Have people know that I have an opinion about something. And so that's, I think, the people need to stand up. If they've got an issue, they will listen to them if you'll just show up.
Thank you, Mark. Caleb James.
Absolutely not. I don't think the local government is representative of the population for multiple reasons. One reason being is elected representatives aren't keeping their word. They say they're going to run and do everything they can to make housing affordable, and then they raise taxes 6 years in a row. I don't see how you're helping people afford the place they live when you're making it more expensive every year, and that's just on you. Number two, something as culturally insensitive as not funding the Douglas Center. That whole brown community, when I went out there to pass out handouts and door hangers, everyone was telling me, well, I guess we'll see. Maybe we'll get something. I don't think it's going to happen. They don't care about us. That's the perception. You want to know why they're not voting? They voted people in who said they believe in equality. And those same people didn't care about them when it was time. That's why we're not representative, why we're not represented. That's why it's not equal, because you're electing people over and over again who promise you equality, promise you affordable housing, and do nothing about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb. Linda Morse.
I am the first commissioner elected from the Northview area. I even dug into that a bit. I think that's important. And Jared McKee moved out to Northview 2 years ago. It's not Northview itself that's that important, but it's the idea that finally, after all, we've had commissioners from the central part of town and the west side of town, never Northview. I have been an advocate for the Northview area, but I believe as a commissioner, I'm an advocate for the entire city. And that's so important. I don't want to be arguing with another commissioner about, well, you got a road last year, I want a road this year kind of thinking. We have had good balance here. I am on record as supporting the Douglas Center, and I will help build it at the first opportunity. We need to identify some funding, and that's what this 3.3 cents sales tax is about, are those things that we can't fund otherwise, and we won't get them otherwise if we don't pass that. So I encourage you to do that. Participatory, we need people to come to meetings. I hear people complain that, well, our neighborhood didn't get a say in this, but you know what? Nobody came to the city commission when we were in our budget session, 5 different meetings. And it's not, I understand not wanting to sit down there for hours. I sit down there for hours.
Thank you, Linda. I'm going to repeat the question again. Do you see the local government as representative of the community at large? If so, how do you plan to support and or enhance citizen engagement? And if not, what would you suggest to make local government more inclusive? Maureen Chahan.
I live on the south side of town. I live in a neighborhood that is underserved. We call it SOPO for South of Points. We have, in my neighborhood, 9 years lower life expectancy than across 17th Street and up the hill. 10 years if you go one district farther than that. A big part of that is the fact that the income in my neighborhood is about a third of what it is in the neighborhood just next. So representation does matter. These are the people that I live with. These are the people that I work with. These are the things that I've been passionate about with the Coalition for Equal Justice, with helping with the Douglas Center, and helping with the Wonder Workshop. So I think I would be representative. citizen engagement, that's something we really need to work on. I'm really impressed with the Northview Rising Group, and depending on how things go in November, I'm going to try to work on getting a SOPO neighborhood organization going so that our voices are heard more distinctly.
Thank you, Maureen. Mary Renee Shirk.
So I'm going to get real here. Representation matters, and I don't think the City Commission is representative of the city, and running for this office has made it even clearer that it isn't. I was told I need to raise between $8,000 and $14,000, and I should ask all my friends for checks for $100 or $200 or $500. The people I represent don't have that kind of money. Most people in Manhattan don't have $100 or $200 or $500, and it isn't that they don't believe in the message, it's that they don't have it. They're not coming to meetings at 7 p.m. because they're students who have class all day and wait tables at Olive Garden in the evening and then don't have Attabus to get them home. So they can't go to the meetings to tell you they don't have Attabus because they're at work. Or because both parents work and 7 p.m. is when you bathe and wrestle the kids to get them in bed. Also, that broadcast has a horrible hum that drives me crazy because I watch City Commission meetings from home so I can yell back at the screen when it's appropriate. So representation matters, and part of this process is the reason we don't have it. A lot of the reason I'm running is because I have been poor in this town, and now I have the privilege of the time and the money to be able to run to represent those people. I feel like we've set up a system where we have shut out the people we want to represent. And until we make this system easier, until we realize that not everybody can go to a meeting at the exact same time, until we realize that if we want to represent a small town, we have to make the barrier to becoming city commissioner lower and make sure everyone feels included, we're not going to have representation.
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
Yes, when I listen to this question, I hear that there's two points here. There's representation and then there's engagement. I think the city is actually doing a really stellar effort in improving programs and initiatives for engagement, everything from planning and pints, where you can go get a beer with Chad Bunger and talk about planning on a weekly basis, I believe. That's a great idea. Northview Rising we have Neighborhood MHK, and there's a lot of different tools that are being implemented to engage with citizens in unique and creative ways, so we're not just limited to showing up on a Tuesday night to a city commission meeting. That being said, as far as representation, I think that we can do better to represent the whole of our community. And we know that people who are marginalized, who have less income, who are minority populations, are just not going to be represented. And we have to be very intentional about asking for their presence and their voice. Minority representation does not happen by accident. It must be intentional. So I think that things like participatory budgeting, where a portion of money is set aside for people in a neighborhood or a group to decide how that money is spent, is one way that we could consider engaging with people. And I also think that we have a growing Spanish population, but none of our city communication on social media or website is available in Spanish. And I think if we had that translated, that would be very helpful.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
Like everyone else, I'm not exactly sure that our local government, and in this case the city commission, because we also have the school district and several other agencies, is totally representative. But I do believe that some of our commissioners have been trying. It used to be the meetings were held and nobody knew what was going on because it wasn't being broadcast anywhere. Some improvements were made. More improvements are possible. We have to get out and get to those people who have got a more diverse background. My wife was Korean. She had a difficult time trying to follow along with the television because we talk too fast. And it's hard for people who don't have English as a first language to be able to translate it and understand what's going on. But it's something that we have to work on. And we can't always say, we don't get enough participation. As was mentioned, really a bad time to have that meeting, but it fits with everybody else's busy schedules. I have to not attend fraternity meetings in order to go to the city commission, and if elected, to stay at those meetings for as long as it takes.
Thank you, Vincent.